This episode is brought to you by New York Life. Their financial professionals can help you navigate life's decisions, big and small. We'll explain more in a bit, but first, let's get into the episode.
Being super time constrained with a never-ending to-do list is almost directly at odds with wanting things to be perfect. Because you can't make things perfect when you have a very finite amount of time and you have 100 things to do every single hour. I'm still learning to not try to get to 150% and to accept the fact that probably my 80% is more than good enough.
I'm Carly Zakin.
And I'm Danielle Weisberg.
Welcome to 9 to 5-ish with the Skin.
We've run into so many questions over the years and had so many moments where we needed advice, and we got it from women who'd been there.
And that's what we're bringing you with this show. Each week, we're helping you get what you want out of your career by talking to the smartest leaders we know.
Because we know your work life is a lot more than 9 to 5.
All right, let's get into it.
Today, our guests are Edith Cooper and Jordan Taylor. This is a first for us on this podcast. They are a mother-daughter duo that has founded Medley, a leadership coaching platform focused on equipping emerging leaders to be more authentic, dynamic, and inclusive. They founded the platform after seeing a need for it in their own lives and careers. Edith had a 30-plus year career on Wall Street, where she ran human capital management for Goldman Sachs, and Jordan worked in media as the chief of staff at Mike and was a consultant at Boston Consulting Group. Edith and Jordan, welcome to 9 to 5-ish.
Thank you for having us.
So we're going to start off the way we do all these interviews, which is a lightning round. Because there are two of you, we're going to direct the questions individually. Are you nervous? You should be nervous. This is the tough part.
Pretty nervous.
Thank you. Edith, I don't feel you're nervous enough. Edith, what was the very first job you got paid for?
I worked in my dad's dental office. He was a dentist in the lab that made teeth. And I sat there and created molds that provided the framework for these teeth. That was my first paid job.
I was not expecting that. Wow.
I wasn't either. Also, like, dentist, HR, these are like scary professions.
I also babysat, but that's not so interesting. So let's go with the dentist thing.
Jordan, does your mom have a secret hobby or skill?
She's an incredible flight booker. Is one of her very underrated skills. She will find a deal. She will find the best option. It will be maximizing rewards points. It's truly incredible.
That is really a gift to the whole family.
Yes. Thank you for highlighting that, Dan. Props are required.
Jordan, what do you call your mom at work?
Edith. Absolutely. No question.
Edith, what do you call your daughter at work?
Jordan.
Jordan, what do you call your mom at the Thanksgiving table?
Mom?
Edith, I mean mom. That's what she calls me at the Thanksgiving
table. She's not wrong.
Edith, what is the one nickname that only you say to your daughter?
Jay.
Jordan, what is the one thing that only you can make fun of your mom about?
She is obsessed with finding deals. Obsessed. Oh. In every context. She will drive around for hours to not park in a parking garage.
Okay, a little exaggeration.
Edith, what's the last deal you got?
I am going to Paris for a long weekend on a really pretty good fare and booked my hotel with points.
I love this.
We love that.
I would say another deal that you could share, Edith, is your car wash membership.
Okay, this is a lightning round. We don't have time for repeat questions.
It's a time to learn about you.
I have a clarifying lightning round question. Jordan, do you have siblings?
I have two younger brothers, Daniel and Henry.
Edith, are you going to work with them too? Is there jealousy dynamics at play?
I'm engaged with him in not in a co-founder way, but in every other way I am. So, you know, if I'm your mom, you get me involved. That's how I roll.
Jordan, does this make you the favorite child or the least favorite?
Ooh, I would say I'm firmly the favorite daughter. And it depends on the day whether I'm the least or most favorite overall. Depends on the day.
diplomatic answer. You are taking a long car ride together. You're on a business trip. You each get to choose one song to play and blast at full volume. Jordan, what does your mom choose?
A song by Kem, probably. And I can hear the song, but I don't know the name of it. Edith, what's the name of it?
They're all my favorite.
All right, Edith, what is Jordan putting at full blast?
Beyonce, the queen.
Which song?
It doesn't matter. Just for hours of it. Hours.
Okay, thank you guys. We want to talk about your relationship with each other first, clearly, because it is obviously so foundational. And as Danielle said, we've never had a mother-daughter duo on the show before. Jordan, I'm curious, I want to start with you. Describe your mom growing up as the professional. Like, how did you think about her as a professional?
Wow, I have such vivid memories of her as a professional woman, to the point where going into the office with her and meeting her colleagues was the highlight of my year, seemingly. And a couple of things really jump out to me looking back. Firstly, was how excited all of her colleagues would be to meet members of her family, and how so many people would share completely unsolicited, wow, your mom has meant so much to me in helping me do X. So I had this impression, which I think is very valid today, of her really being someone who inspired and mentored and grew everyone around her. The other impression that really has affected how I think about the world now is, I'm sure we'll get a sense of this over the next, 40 minutes in our conversation. Edith is truly someone who takes deep joy in connecting with people. She lights up, she gives energy to others, and it doesn't matter who that person is. And so she wonders sometimes why she's in a taxi cab and someone starts sharing their life story to her. But when I would walk into the office with my mom, and I will call her my mom in this exact context, she stops, greets every person who she'd engage with by name, whether that was the security guard at the entrance, whether that was her boss, whether that was the secretary on her floor, every single person. And that's really stuck with me as well in terms of how I try and aspire to engage with people, no matter the context.
Edith, I mean, you obviously raised a phenomenal daughter. You also became someone that she wanted to work with. How did you talk about the construct and the meaning of work raising your kids?
So I'll start with a funny story from when actually Jordan was in first grade. So she's the oldest. So I had a six-year-old, a four-year-old, and a one-year-old. And I got a call from her teacher and said, "Miss Cooper, this is an awkward conversation, but Jordan shared in circle time that you had to work because you needed money to put food on the table and buy clothing and have a safe place to live. And so we just want you to know that the school is here for you if you need financial help." It was a private school. And I said, "What? Excuse me?" She goes, "Well, it seems like things are a little tough and we want you to know." I was like, No. "We're okay. The tuition is going to be paid. And thank you for your concern. But we talk about values a lot. And as one of the few working mothers in the school, it was a natural conversation to have with a six-year-old, given I wasn't at as many events, if any events, on a weekly basis. And we wanted to explain the principle of why I worked, as did my husband, and the values that that brought forth. At the core of it, it's super wonderful to hear the observations that Jordan had on how I really do, to this day, value interactions with people. It's like everyone knows something that I don't know. As a mom with a busy life, I probably for a long time remember the things that I missed versus the things that I connected on. And that's often something that I tell people as they're pondering how to juggle it all.
You had this huge career at Goldman. Running HR is not a small deal at a company like that. Thematically, what were the things that you were noticing as you're working and you're seeing people struggling with various things that you just started to kind of piece together? What were you noticing with professionals?
So, I had a unique lens because I spent the first 10 years running various business within sales and trading. And let's just say it was a very defined culture of providing for clients. But there were certain things stylistically that we really needed to evolve, particularly given how important it was for us to continue to expand the skill sets and experiences of people who were showing up on these trading desks. Going into HR was actually an extraordinary moment. I joined the division in the spring of 2008. The financial crisis hit in the fall. And what is it like to take on a job where you knew the least in the room from a practitioner's perspective about HR, but you also knew that we really needed to stay close to our people? And I, with my incredible colleagues in what we called human capital management, really took it as an opportunity to start to pay attention to the changing needs and demographics of, I think there were 30, 35,000 people at the time. And so, Carly, you asked, what did I notice? I noticed that there was less willingness to do something because that's the way we always did it. And there was a opportunity to evolve the openness of my colleagues at the most senior ranks of the firm to really understand that that wasn't an entitled, spoiled perspective, but rather it was a real opportunity because, you know, people were saying, like, why does my work matter? How could I be more impactful? And that, to me, could be a handful at times, but we could start to read that as people really caring about the work that they were doing. So that was a big beginning of an evolution. The other one that I thought was really important was that we really started to hold ourselves accountable for moving the culture forward in a way that I think really made a difference. You know, we got under the data. We really understood that the experiences of certain people, people of color, as an example, women at certain points of their career, and the list were long, were experiencing the firm in a different way. But why was that important? Because we evolved the chit-chat around the significance of diversity to saying, okay, well, how do we think about extraordinary talent? And how do we make sure that we are creating an environment where everyone can thrive? And so it was like, I would say, with partnership from many business leaders and supported and encouraged and partnered with HCM, you know, we really started to make a difference. I remember welcoming all the analysts, 2,000 from around the world, to New York for the orientation. And someone raised their hand and said, do you feel that you can bring your whole self to work? And I said, yeah, you know, generally, I kind of like basically gave a answer, no answer, nonsense. And after we were done, one of my colleagues, my chief of staff at the time, pulled me aside and said, you didn't really answer that question. And you need to really think about why that person asked that question and what it took for the person to ask that question. So as a follow-up, we're going to sit down and I'm going to tell you what I know to be true with respect to why that matters to a generation of people and how you basically need to get it together.
Wow, what an impressive chief of staff.
She's incredible. Annie Lou Vasquez-Ubarri, COO of TPG out on the West Coast and in the globe. And she's still the person I call when I need to get schooled. So there you go.
One more question, Edith, a follow-up from that. So you left five years ago, you said, and you obviously were going to get to Medley, and so you've done something really innovative with that experience. However, I do want to ask, given the last 5 years going through the pandemic, everything that has happened with remote work, hybrid work, what happened after George Floyd's murder, what happened with even talking about how you support women who work in different places. Do you feel like you were like, oh man, I really left at the right time? Or is part of you like, I kind of wish that I had been at an organization like that to go through all of these things?
Oh, I'm still in it. You know, I don't work in that organization, but I really feel like I still have a responsibility, and I'm choosing that word very carefully, to leverage the platforms that I do have, including Medley, to stay in it. Because I was such a huge beneficiary of the experiences of people that I worked with, my bosses, leaders that I would count as mentors and sponsors. And so therefore, I'm still in it, but just from a different vantage point.
When we started the Skim, we wanted to help inform and empower women. Nearly 12 years later, our mission has not changed. Because you're navigating everything from the news to major decisions, we know how important it is to have people you can rely on and sources you can trust.
When it comes to finances, New York Life makes this really easy. They have over 12,000 financial professionals working in communities across the country. And tapping their network means never having to make a financial decision alone. They'll be by your side every step of the way through life's biggest moments.
Whether you're looking to protect your family or achieve financial independence, New York Life can provide solutions that make sense for you and your loved ones. Plus, you get the peace of mind of knowing you're backed by a Fortune 100 company with nearly two centuries of experience supporting people like you.
Learn more at NYL.com. That's NYL.com to learn more.
Jordan, Medley, how'd the idea come up?
So the idea for Medley was actually inspired by a course that I took in my final semester when I was at Harvard Business School. I have always been a team and group person. I played every sport under the sun. I have always been someone who have had sort of my most meaningful growth experience in the context of others. And so I went into business school thinking, I want to start a company. I had been at an early stage startup before. I thought that I could spend the summer coming up with ideas, and then I would start the business after school. And I toyed around with a bunch of different ideas that summer. I, at one point, was thinking, should I start an outerwear company and make coats? So I was all over the map. And it was this sort of full circle moment, I would say, in this last semester, where I took a leadership development course that took place in groups of six people, and every group met for 2 hours a week over the course of the semester. And at the end of the course, I firstly just realized that this sort of leadership journey is a never-ending one, and I still had so much to learn. But secondly, I just recognized how powerful the group experience was for me in my own journey. And I had a thought that so many more people could benefit from having a group and having access to really structured leadership development earlier on in their career, because I had gone to Harvard Business School and I had opted into this class and I had, you know, taken that step. And then when I did a lot of research, it seemed like there were a lot of programs that were out there already that were really focused on executives and people at the very, very top. And so with nothing but an instinct around, I think there's something in groups, I think there's something in coaching, I had no idea what the business is going to be. Edith and I, mom at the time and still mom.
I got a mom. Yes.
I had been keeping her in the loop on different ideas and was sharing this one in, I think, a level of detail that really stood out to the other things that I'd been throwing around. And after one of our phone calls, she called me back and said, Jordan, I really see the vision for Medley and I want to do this with you. We had had a name at the time because Medley was actually named after a coach that was really inspiring to both Edith and I, who we both knew very well, who unfortunately passed away. His name was O'Neill Medley. And so we had a name, we had an instinct, and we had each other. And then from there, it was kind of off to the races.
So let me tell you about the time that Danielle and I told our moms that we were going to go start a company. Went something like, we have this idea, we see this opportunity, we are like a great partnership, and like this is the moment. And one of them or both of them said the following: why would you leave your job? Are you crazy? Why don't you do this in a few years after you save up more money? Girls, we believe in you and we love you, but this is a terrible time to do this. So Edith, props to you for really tapping into an entrepreneurial spirit that our parents share revisionist history with us today on.
Also, we're not giving you any money.
Yeah, big one. I forgot. There is no money for us to give you, just so you know. So Edith, like, I'm just so curious, you know, it is one thing to like be entrepreneurial in a big corporate organization, but like you came from like real corporate America. Like when you think of corporate America, like you think of your job or your old job. Where did you tap into that entrepreneurial, like, oh my God, like my daughter who's not had that much professional experience and is going to like need me to guide her a little bit has this idea, like, let's just go do this. Like, just walk us through that moment.
Maybe this is an ignorance is bliss moment because, quite frankly, if I had known then what I know now about what it means to create a new category of impact and a new business in that construct, maybe we would have talked about it a little bit longer. Probably would have still done it. But literally, it was like, hey, Jay, I think we should do this together. And it has been a big adjustment for me because you are right. I worked in a large enterprise where if you wanted to know something or learn something, it's there somewhere. And so, you know, to go from that to being in a two-person flexible workspace was a huge adjustment. And I think it was a big lift for Jordan, actually, because as a co-founder, you have to just do everything. And we were looking to recruit someone. We were looking at a recruiting software. And Jordan said, well, you know, it was just two of us. So I was still okay to be mom at that point. And she said, well, I mean, my gosh, every year Goldman Sachs hired thousands of people. You must know how to use this software. I'm like, what are you talking about? You know, I could give you the framework. I could tell you what the components of how we figure out who to hire and what, because I was surrounded by recruiting experts. It was also a lift to really develop our way of working, because I didn't go into it because I wanted to be the boss. I'm not the boss. I'm not the CEO. Jordan is the CEO. And we are co-founders. And what does that mean? Everyone has to have their own definition. But for me, I didn't want to be coming over the top. I've raised Jordan, so telling her what to do is usually not a good move. And I really wanted to collaborate. But after a period of time where I literally didn't jump in at a point where I should have jumped in, and Jordan's like, what's up? Why don't you say anything? He's like, well, because I don't want to dominate. She's like, what are you talking about? Like, this is yours. Like, this is your topic. And that was a really important moment. The principles of how we work together really needed to evolve. It was a big adjustment.
Jordan, I'm curious, both in the general kind of context of your own career development and coaching and stepping into a CEO position in something that you've created, and also the family dynamic part, what have you had to develop? What were some of the areas in your own leadership journey that you needed to work on to step into not only a first-time CEO, but a first-time CEO of a career coaching company? And then also, is it boundaries? Is it areas of distinction between you and Edith to be able to do that with your mom specifically?
I think the first thing, and I appreciate you bringing that up, given the context of what Medley does, which is all around coaching and groups and connection, I invest a lot of time and energy in my own growth and development. I knew that if I was going to be able to effectively lead Medley with Edith, I needed to be really intentional about creating a practice and structures and really rigor around my own growth. And so I am in a group, not surprisingly. I have a group that's been meeting for 3 years. There's actually other founders in the group, but running very different businesses located across the country. And that has been a really powerful container for me as I've continued to grow and expand. A couple of things that I've really had to shift. Firstly, when you're building a business, your greatest resource is time. And being super time constrained with a never-ending to-do list is almost directly at odds with wanting things to be perfect, because you can't make things perfect when you have a very finite amount of time and you have 100 things to do every single hour. And so I have really had to learn, and I'm still learning, and Edith and I really actually approach decision-making in a very different way sometimes, to not try to get to 150% and to accept the fact that probably my 80% is more than good enough. And so I've been constantly working, constantly pushing back at my own instinct to try to make things as perfect as they possibly can be. The second piece, which again, really does tie into how we approach the things at Medley, have been really recognizing the importance of relationships and investing thoughtfully in them. So not only am I in a group of founders, but I learn constantly from the people that I work with and from people I engage with outside of Medley. And that has been imperative for me, because when you're able to really establish trust with others, they can tell you, give you the direct feedback, and you can have those tough conversations, and you can make things happen much more effectively than you can otherwise. And that also, for me, has been building on an existing strength, and also something that I've really tried to absorb and learn a lot from in terms of Edith's experience as well. And then specifically as it relates to, I think the question was on our roles at Medley and how sort of that shifted.
I think that, and I'll be a little bit more specific here. People ask Carly and I all the time, like, so do you think that you should go into business with a friend? And do you think you should go into business with a roommate? And we're like, no, that's actually probably a horrible idea. And it just happens to work for us. But we also put a lot of communication and development and thoughtfulness and boundaries over the past 11 years of running this business together. How do you not let traditional family kind of power dynamics creep into the business?
We've had to learn this over time. It's taken us 5 years to get to where we are now. I will say it has grown off of the foundation that we set at the very beginning and establishing our goals, level of trust with each other, and what we wanted to get out of building the company. I remember very, very early on, we were in a conference room at one of a company that she was on the board of at the time, and we mapped out, like, what are the areas we care deeply about in terms of the business itself? What else is important to us in terms of how we want to work together and what we want this to mean for our relationship? And so, you know, it has certainly been an ongoing point of discussion, and it is hard to sometimes have very clear boundaries between work and life. I will say maybe in 2020, it was an especially different period where I was going through a really hard time, had some pretty serious mental health challenges. And I think that was probably the hardest moment because Edith just wanted to be my mom. And she is, but she just wanted to be there for me. She wanted to just tell me it would be okay and just support me in any way that she can. And we had a business to run. We had employees, we had investors, we had customers, we had things we needed to do. And there was the tension. But I will say, having gone through that and where we are now, the benefits to our relationship have actually been really powerful in that we've created a way to communicate with each other, both as mother-daughter and as business partners, that would have been hard for us to get to without this really formative experience of us trying to build a company together.
We spend a lot of time both personally and on the show talking to people about kind of executive level coaching, CEOs, founders, C-suite level coaching. But we don't spend a lot of time talking about kind of management coaching or coaching at kind of like the mid-level in your career. And I'll say, like, internally at our company, like, we've spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to develop that muscle and how do we do that, because we do see the need. What do you see as kind of the, if you had to diagnose, you know, obviously generalizing here, like, what's the number one piece of coaching needed at that level? Like, what do you guys see come up a lot?
I think at the core, you know, to really show up and to be part of an organization, and you can define that in any way you want, you have to be centered yourself. And you have to really appreciate the fact that how you show up and how you interact across a number of different dimensions really matters. And when I say a number of different dimensions, I'm talking about, you know, how you look at someone or don't, how you listen and reply to someone's perspective, particularly if it's not similar to yours, how you question in a way that is grounded in learning, not in interrogation. And how do you be part of an engine that, you know, ultimately is aligned for impact, innovation, or whatever, without sacrificing who you are as a person? And that historically isn't honestly something that organizations have owned as a responsibility from a learning and development perspective, particularly at that middle rank. And so what happens is, you know, you start out in your career, you know, in the first 2 or 3 years, it's really more of your execution of the craft, the skill of the craft that gets you noticed. And then there are things like communications and engagement, et cetera, but you're taught those things because there are all sorts of frameworks around that. Then you rise in the organization and voila, you know, you're moving forward and now you're a quote manager. There hasn't really been an opportunity for that leader who's rising in the organization to figure out the craft of human connection. And that's why Medley was such an exciting opportunity for me to work on with Jordan, because the need is so clear to me. I remember back in the day, if you wondered who was the old one, I'm going to tell you I'm old right now. Back in the day, you know, when I was rising, i.e. like 10 years ago, no one was talking about caring for your people at work. I mean, I was like almost doing it under the darkness of night. Like, you know, you didn't want to be too soft. You really just wanted to be on people and hold people accountable. But how do you teach people how to interact in a way that inspires and keeps you engaged and excited about your work? And that's why Medley has been such a wonderful journey for me and for us, because we see clearly what the impact of the work will be.
And I just love to add a couple things on that. I mean, I will say it's been really exciting to see how companies are recognizing this need for their mid-level sort of emerging leaders and emerging managers, because employees have different expectations of the support that they want, and they're actively seeking it out. and they are at this transitional point in their careers and in the organizations themselves. And so I'm encouraged, excited, inspired by the fact that some companies are thinking, why is it that just the C-suite needs to have access to an executive coach? How might we be able to broaden access throughout the organization? And I'm also equally excited about the fact that individuals have options now for finding a coach themselves, for joining a community or joining a group. It can look like a lot of different things, but I think part of the reason why 9to5ish has had so much momentum is because people are eager to invest in and learn and grow in their own careers and sort of take charge.
I want to go to an audience question from our audience in the newsletters. Both of you can answer this, but on this topic, what are some very concrete and tactical ways for leaders to become more inclusive leaders?
Pay attention and be intentional. Walk into a room with your team and notice who's always talking, who's not talking at all. Notice how people show up and encourage that real inclusive atmosphere by the way you behave yourself.
Can I ask a follow-up to that?
Mm-hmm.
Now that we're in kind of hybrid remote work, how does that look today?
In some ways, you could say it might be easier, right? But I do think that it puts more onus on leaders to really proactively engage on a one-on-one basis with people so that you can turn the one-dimensional personas that we are on any virtual meeting into something that has depth. And it gives people an opportunity who, quite frankly, are not as comfortable speaking up and speaking out in any format, an opportunity to really practice those skills in a safer space. Because a lot of this is really, as a leader, you know, are you creating a safe space for people to take risks, to have an opinion that might not be the most popular opinion, to challenge what you say and what other people say? And leaders have to set the tone, right? If you're talking over people all the time, why wouldn't everybody talk over each other? When you're dismissive or disregard, why shouldn't everyone else do that? If you are listening and hear something that doesn't really make sense, say, you know what, can we just spend a little more time on that? Like, I have a follow-up question. And if it still doesn't make sense, instead of raking the person over the coals, it's like, I think there's probably a couple of different angles that you might want to think about that. Let's follow up afterwards. Next, let's move on in a different way.
Edith just highlighted several great strategies for how you can be thoughtfully inclusive in meetings. And we just did a workshop with one of our partners on this exact topic on inclusive behaviors in meetings. And so three things that we highlighted in the workshop. Firstly, monitoring turn taking. So equal airtime is one of the biggest indicators of a psychologically safe environment and consistent engagement in a group and in a team. Second is making recognition a habit and being really thoughtful about that recognition. And so the next time you're in a meeting, acknowledge a new person who you haven't acknowledged recently for sharing a contribution or for sharing an idea. And the third strategy is modeling humility. And doing that as a leader helps create space for other people. If you're running the meeting, you might have a position of power, you might have an authority in the room, and really being smart about how you're modeling vulnerability and humility with others can create space for diverse perspectives and different points of view.
Last question, who is someone else we should have on the show?
You know who I think would have a really fascinating story and in a very different industry would be Thelma Golden, who's the curator of the Studio Museum of Harlem.
Awesome.
Oh.
She's incredible, has built a deeply impactful career in the arts, and her personal journey as well would, I think, inspire a lot of people.
That's a great idea. We will follow up with you on that if you know her to introduce us. Well, Edith, Jordan, thank you so much. Congratulations. It was very fun for us to interview you both together and excited to see how you continue to grow this business.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 9to5ish with The Skim. A new episode will be in your feed again next Wednesday. And if you want to keep up with us in between episodes, follow us on Instagram @Carly and Danielle.
It's a really good account, I promise.